Welcome to All Analytics Radio. This is Jim Connolly. I'm editor of allanalytics.com. This being an election year in the U.S., you can expect plenty of talk about how government has to change the way it does business. You might already be tired of that talk from the presidential candidates, but just wait, because in the coming months, a few hundred campaigns will pick up steam in the congressional and state government races. Those candidates won't be the only ones driving change in government, though. Another change agent is already at work, and that is analytics. Today we'll be discussing how analytics are bringing improvements in efficiency and even delivery of new services in the government sector. Our guest today is the Chief Information Officer for the state of Ohio, Stu Davis. Stu also is a board member and past president of the National Association of State CIOs. Stu, how are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm pleased to be on the show today.
It's great to have you. Before we get into the discussion, I'll add a note for listeners. We welcome your questions and comments on the chat board below, and we'll address as many as we can during the next half hour. To get the discussion started, I invite listeners to introduce themselves to their peers on the chat board and perhaps, you know, share your own thoughts on how analytics can improve the way government functions. Stu, let's start. Through your work in Ohio and on the national scene, what has really impressed you in terms of the innovation and application of analytics in state government?
Well, it's been sort of an interesting journey. I think the data analytics aspect is sort of still, is, in my opinion, a little bit more untapped than I would like to see it. But, you know, if you think about business intelligence and data analytics from a state CIO top 10 perspective, it's really been on the list for us for about almost seven years now. And it's creeping up. It creeped up to number four on the list in 2015, and we've got 35% of the states that are really reporting pursuing data analytics or big data initiatives right now. Some pretty cool things, though. I think that, you know, in the fraud, waste, and abuse section, I think we, with infant mortality and even some things that we're seeing now with, economic indicators coming through state websites and free feeds. I mean, it's pretty exciting right now, I think, for the states in particular to be able to look at how they can improve the business of the state through data analytics. And of course, there are challenges with that, but I think that everybody is pretty focused on trying to get through those challenges.
It sounds like doing some research on this that a lot of people would be surprised at where analytics actually are playing a role. I did hear a story about, you know, what I think it was in Kansas, where somebody started off just doing some research on an old piece of legislation that was in the appellate courts, and ended up building an app that tracked the legislative intent on all types of old legislation, which is a pretty cool tool when you start getting into court cases and, you know, what did the state legislature mean 50, 60, 70 years ago when they passed a particular bill. Anything that might surprise people in terms of, you know, what you've seen that, you know, where analytics are playing a role?
You know, I think probably one of the ones that was kind of surprising to me was sort of a dot connection exercise, which is kind of what I view sort of data analytics as really being the true dot connecting sort of tool. And it was really cross-referencing phone calls and outbound calls from a prison, if you will, back to taxation and their help desk to look at potentially for fraud and waste and abuse, which was an interesting sort of thing that I never would have thought of. But, you know, two guys connecting dots trying to figure those kind of things out and to present or prevent that fraud and waste and abuse, I think was that's the kind of thing I think you're going to see. I think you're going to see those very strong, innovative kind of, hey, what if we did this? What if? And, you know, what if we tried this? And I think that that's just going to continue to grow as we go forward. I think in another area that you'll see a lot of innovation, I think, coming forward is in the cybersecurity area and the ability for us to leverage analytics to get engage a baseline, and then when we see things that are above or below that baseline, hey, what's going on here? What's the anomaly? And then we can be a little bit more predictive in that space. In particular, cybersecurity seems to be one that I'm very interested, at least right now.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned cybersecurity. I'm curious, how does the need for analytics tools in cybersecurity at the state level perhaps compare with what we see at the national level?
You know, I don't think it's all that much different. I think some of that analytics is really being driven out of the federal side as well, and, you know, Department of Homeland Security in particular. Some of the things that they're collecting and being able to communicate out after they anonymize some of the data, that's really giving us some pretty decent heads up on some threats and things that might be, you know, things to look for, if you will. But I think what you're going to see is, you know, right now it's sort of traffic monitoring and network monitoring, and I think it will grow into a much broader sort of view as you bring in other data components that are being captured through, through security information event managers and all of those kinds of tools that we have in play to begin to sort of log and look at what's happening across our networks and what programs and things like that. I think it's just really on the edge of really helping us from a security standpoint going forward.
So you're looking at a learning experience for your systems.
Absolutely. Sort of you get to that artificial intelligence, or at least flagging and some learning through that process to get to artificial intelligence on the cybersecurity side, I think is truly where we're going to end up heading. And even if we're monitoring sort of when people are using systems and we see somebody who normally is accessing between 8 and 5 and all of a sudden they're accessing at 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, what's going on? Is that worth looking at? Is it an anomaly that we should be aware of? And really getting proactive in that space where we can follow through on those kind of things.
Stu, I'll let you know, just looking at some of the audience comments here, we have people coming in from your home state and from as far away as Nigeria.
All right.
Nice mix of people.
That's good to have Buckeyes on the call.
One question from the audience actually is kind of interesting. In how do the states determine what they will do with analytics? Do you see governors issuing mandates, or is it more of a grassroots type of thing?
Well, you know, that it leads into a very good sort of segue into executive sponsorship, because personally, the data analytics that we would employ from a state perspective should always be driven by results and outcomes. And I think that from a governor's standpoint, to be able to articulate, here's the problem that we're trying to solve, and then the state has the ability to pull the appropriate data sets together, leverage those data sets, and run it through tools and do those what-if scenarios and begin to look at policy changes and things like that that benefit where we're going from a state perspective is pretty critical. I think that the executive sponsorship, either coming out of a director in an agency or the governor's office or the administration, I think is a pretty critical part of trying to streamline and make government more efficient.
So the comparable to a CEO mandate or a board of directors at a corporate level. You know, you need that leadership.
Absolutely, and it's got to be business-driven. I think that, you know, sometimes from an IT perspective, we cannot be the drivers of these kind of things. It has to come from the business. We have to enable their process so that we're getting to the business of the state and fixing some of the things that have been broken for a while. And I will tell you that part of the challenges in that space is the roadblocks that are sometimes put in place through folk law or whatever, you know, we can't share our data kind of mentality, that we need to really sort of change the discussion around data as a strategic asset and begin to leverage the data that we have with, of course, the appropriate stewardship around security and what can be released, what can't be released, all of those kind of things. But I think that the first initial challenge is, you know, for a business unit to do data analytics is one thing, but more times than not, there's other data that would support that particular aspect in a variety of different agencies. How do we get our arms around that? How do we share that? What's the data governance process in there to make sure that we're doing the right things with the data? And then the application of data analytics to get to those business outcomes.
So it's about not only sharing data, but sharing success stories and sharing templates. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely does. And, you know, we've, you know, here in Ohio, we look, Indiana has a pretty strong data analytics process going on over there. And we're talking with them all the time about the memorandums of agreements that they put in place to share data and to learn from what they're doing. Montana has done some very similar and some really good work. Kansas, you know, you'd kind of mentioned Kansas earlier, Washington. I mean, there are a bunch of states that are really starting to pick this up and do really, really innovative things.
Now, besides, you know, the truly innovative, the, you know, ideas, you know, new services, for instance, how do you see analytics being used to improve the efficiency of traditional state services, you know, such as unemployment benefits, welfare, crime prevention, public records access, or healthcare?
Well, I think that if you think about analytics and the improvement of, you know, the delivery of state services that we've always had, I mean, anytime you can evaluate the outcome, the effectiveness or the citizen satisfaction, savings through that process, generating revenue, you can benefit from analytics and improve the decision-making process. I think what data analytics really does is gets us more to where we've talked about for a long time, where it's fact-based decision-making, and I think that everybody can benefit from that. And I think that you're seeing some of that popping up from a strategical standpoint as well as from a tactical standpoint. And I also think that some of the visualization tools that are coming out now, and you know, GIS or spatial analysis has been out there for quite some time, but this is not an unusual concept for the spatial community. We've been doing a lot of this type of data analytics, you know, just by creating a certain carved out area of a state or of a city or whatever it may be, and leveraging the analysis through that process to do that dot connecting through a GIS process.
Now, are there, now obviously GIS has been available now for 30 years, whatever. What other types of new data sources are you starting to see pop up that can be useful for a state government?
Well, certainly the unstructured data component is going to be an interesting process as we go through what a state can pull and what they can use and how they would use it. I think we have to be very careful about that, simply because, you know, there is an aspect of, you know, how far does government go in looking at some of that data. But I think that from a variety of standpoints, certainly the data that we have in the state can be augmented through other state data. I mean, if you think about even integrated eligibility and doing analytics between what you're finding in other states and what you're finding in the particular state that you're in or whatever, and comparing those things and looking at trends and starting to see some patterns. And then you can begin to look at, well, what do we need to do to be proactive in this space and be able to model things a little bit differently so that we're getting the services to the citizens that they require and that they need.
Now, you mentioned social media data, you know, and other unstructured data. What's your personal philosophy in terms of how far you can take that data in terms of making decisions? Is it good just to get a ballpark feel for what is going on out there, or can you actually leverage it to make hard decisions?
Yeah, that's a great question. But I guess from a personal standpoint, I find some of that to be a little intrusive. And that's what I guess I'm saying. I think that states need to be a little careful about what they're using that data for, if they're using it, and who is using it. That would be sort of, I would err on the side of caution in that regard.
Yeah, because the first thing that comes to mind for me is the validity of the data. You know, did this person actually do what they said they did on Facebook, or did they even get hacked themselves? You know, which of course is the first alibi
right.
of any public figure who says the wrong thing on social media.
Right. Even from a tax fraud standpoint, you know, you have to be very cautious of the actions you might take simply because it could be, you know, identity theft and so forth and so on, and trying to connect dots to other programs, and then all of a sudden you've taken somebody, sort of put them on a list, and it's because their identity's been stolen, and then you can create a significant nightmare for them as well, even when they haven't really done anything wrong.
Speaking of fraud, how far along the continuum towards maturity do you think fraud-fighting applications are right now? Are we still in the early learning stages, or are you moving further towards maturity?
I think all of it is early, and I think that the early side of that equation is more about the data sets that we're accessing to use, and really the collaboration between other agencies in that space. I mean, if you think about, and I'll use Indiana for example, with the infant mortality data that they were running through their data analytics. I mean, there are numerous agencies, I should say, that have some aspect of that infant mortality information that don't just pop out. It's not a single agency that contains all the data that would be associated with that. And I think and I'm using infant mortality, but it's the same thing with fraud detection, to look at, you know, an employer, workers' comp, those types of activities. It's not just in a particular agency. It's the cross-referencing of a lot of other data that really could be beneficial in that discussion. And I think that will grow. That collaboration will grow. And I think, you hit on it earlier, Jim, the ability for us to get some early quick wins and to show progress and success, and then, you know, hey, what about this? What about this? What's next? How are we doing that? I think that's what this does. That's why I get sort of jazzed up on data analytics.
You mentioned infant mortality a couple times. How are analytics being used there?
So they're basically looking at the infant mortality rates. They're getting data from in here in Ohio. I know they're working with our Medicaid department. They're working with our Health and Human Service group. Basically, all of those agencies are sort of collaborating, and to make sure that what we can do is try to reduce that. So we want to make sure that, you know, that citizens that are in that program are going to the doctor, getting the appropriate nutrition through that process. But it also sort of defines sort of some geographic indicators that are in there that will also help us sort of target and work through. Target's probably a bad word, but you know what I mean. It's more of, you know, let's look at the grouping in society that needs the most help, and we can do that and get them the services and the things that they need in a more readily fashion.
So actually, infant mortality, I'm sorry, would actually be an indicator of multiple social issues, not strictly the health issue.
That is correct.
Now we're about 7 years into the Open Data Initiative at the federal level, and I know that various states have made moves with, you know, their own open data initiatives. Are benefits being realized yet, and what kind of challenges still remain on open data?
Well, I think it is making a difference. I think that there are a number of states that have done some pretty interesting things with open data, and I think that will continue to grow as well. I think, you know, you kind of alluded to that as well earlier, Jim, when you were talking about opening up the data, and this gentleman in Kansas who sort of developed this legislative intent kind of program. I think that's what you're going to see, and you're seeing states now that are collaborating on hackathons and those kind of things where they're exposing data and letting the community come up with applications that support sort of the needs that they see. So, you know, we were talking here in Ohio about doing something similar to support the state parks. What can we do to make that experience better and all those kind of things? And I think you'll see more of that. And that's really about the exposure of data and letting the marketplace sort of drive things. You've seen a lot of this type of activity in the municipal and big cities where they're getting really, really cool applications that are being developed simply because of that openness of the data and the exposure of the data.
Could you envision crowdsourced analytics, say, 5 or 10 years ago?
Interestingly enough, we were kind of talking about that in the GIS community to improve the maps and the data that we had at one point in time. And probably as recent as 7 years ago, you began to see that being used in traffic analysis and all those kind of things from a crowdsourcing standpoint. So the GIS community, which, you know, is near and dear to my heart, I think they kind of saw the writing on the wall in that crowdsourcing piece because it had a direct impact on the quality of the data that we were getting. But I think it takes a little bit more time for some of the other tools to have caught up with the mindset that the GIS community sort of brings to the table, which is share data, share it willingly, and let's do cool analytics and things that are beneficial to the business of the agency or the organization that they work for.
We have a question from the audience about whether each state has its own CIO. My understanding is that sometimes there are multiple CIOs within a state government. How does that get structured? As you look across the membership of NASIO,
Well, it's sort of a mix to a degree. I mean, they may be there is a state chief information officer, I believe, for just about all of the 56 some territories and states. But we're all kind of structured different. In Ohio, I have 26 different agency CIOs that do not necessarily report to me, but they're on. You know, we have a lines of business that we've organized the agencies around, and we have a lead for those lines of business, and we have a technology board that sort of talks through the strategic direction of what the state's doing, even from tactical implementation. But there are other states where the state CIO has control of all of the IT folks. So it's really kind of a mix on the organizational structure and how that comes about. But there is usually, in most cases that I'm aware of, there is a state CIO, a designated state CIO. Now, he might be a different term, like he might be the chief technology officer or something to that effect, but his role is generally about innovation and IT for the state and enabling the business of that particular state or territory.
What are some of the challenges that a state CIO faces?
Well, It's interesting. As you can imagine, with 26 different CIOs in the agency level, some of our role, I think, is the state CIO is really chicken herding. But far and away, I would say that we're all about innovation and trying to enable the business of the state. So, we pull the necessary capabilities together. We pull a variety of data and put it in place and structure it to analyze the data, incorporate outside data, so that we, from an IT perspective, need to be enabling the business side of that equation, which is so integral to data analytics. What is the business outcome that is coming from this? What is the problem we're solving? What is the data that's needed to do anything with that process? How do we engage the subject matter experts in the agencies to look at that data and manipulate that data and put it to the appropriate tools and understand the outcomes and then do what-if type scenarios? I think that's really probably our challenge. I think if you were to label a state CIO, I would say he should be all about the enabling of the business of the state.
So being in a position to share best practices, identify opportunities, and where necessary, encourage sharing of data.
Absolutely.
Another question from the audience is, how do you find the best people to work in state IT? where this person points out pay scales can be below market rates?
Another very good question, and actually it is a challenge. I mean, I think the interesting part about state government, especially public sector work, I would say altogether, you know, there are reasons why we're in public sector. Number one is, you know, you can have a fairly sizable impact on some of the things and the programs that states do that is beyond money to a degree. And I think being involved in some of these larger projects is a tweak, if you will, a plus for someone to come in and look at that. But we readily recognize that there are differences there. I mean, the inability for us to keep and maintain somebody who might be a very strong data analytics guy. And I think that the workforce issues that we have in that space are going to consistently change. You know, all of us from a state perspective are wrestling with, you know, the retirement rates that we see and losing a lot of brain trust from retirement. And I think that we're going to have to get used to a workforce that's, you know, if we get 3 years out of them going forward, I think we're going to be in a pretty good boat. Now, it doesn't mean that they won't come back to state government. I think that, you know, the private sector has its pluses, but it also has its minuses. And I think a lot of the really strong IT folks that we have here in Ohio have come out of the private sector, done some things in the private sector, and they come back because they want to get off the road. It's a quality of life issue. You're home. You can go to their soccer games. Heck, you can be their soccer coach. You know, and you can work through those kind of things. It's a quality of life issue, I think, and that's probably the largest thing that we can bring in keeping in government, I think, because there is some really, really strong IT talent in the state, in Ohio, and the state agencies in particular. And to make sure that they're focused on the right things, I think, is where it all comes down to, you know, and a lot of that has to come back to an enterprise perspective and understanding that everything that we do should be about saving taxpayers' dollars in one fashion or another.
That idea of working in your own state and being home for dinner most nights certainly would appeal to an awful lot of the Fortune 500 CIOs. So that's not a bad little perk.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely correct.
Now, you talked earlier about viewing data as a strategic asset. And, you know, obviously there are people in every state now that recognize that value. However, let's think about, you know, as we walk down to the bottom of the hour here, let's think about the agency heads, you know, who are basically your line of business managers. Don't throw anybody in Ohio under the bus, but what do you hear from your peers in terms of getting those people on board with analytics initiatives?
You know, actually what I hear the most is, can we move faster? And I think that, you know, the problem that I have sometimes with that is, like I mentioned before, so a business unit doing it is significantly different than sharing data with five other agencies to get a better outcome and a better understanding, a holistic view of all the things that might impact that particular factor. And of course, on top of that, you have the business community that, you know, they all have some kind of data analytic tool, and we're going to have so much trouble keeping the talent here. It would be nice to sort of focus on maybe one or two of those tool sets, as opposed to 26 of them, all different in 26 different agencies. So I think that's really the challenge there. And I think also that, you know, in my opinion, I think that this is going to move to sort of a different kind of a game, I think, in the future, too. I think you'll see it in cybersecurity, and I think you'll see more public-private partnerships growing out of the analytical space in particular.
Final question from me as we wrap up. What would make your job easier when it comes to analytics?
Boy, that's a good question. I think probably to streamline the sharing of data. And again, with caveats, of course, there's certain data that we know that we're always going to be restricted, sensitive data that, you know, we always have to protect. We have to be good stewards of the data. But I think really and truly the one thing that would make my life a heck of a lot easier is if we were in a position to share data between agencies in a much quicker fashion than the process that it takes now in terms of stepping through an MOU or a memorandum of agreement or a memorandum of understanding of how that data would be used.
Well, that's something I think you share in common with people throughout not only government but private industry and nonprofits. It's, you know, breaking down those silos. Stu, I want to thank you very much. This has been a great discussion and fun. I hope, you know, that our listeners have learned a bit about what analytics can do in their own regions and their own industry sectors. I invite you to stick around for a few minutes on the chat board if your schedule allows.
Sure.
And in the meantime, I want to thank everyone for joining us today, and I want to thank our sponsor, SAS. This has been Jim Connolly for All Analytics Radio and UBM Tech. Thank you for tuning in. And, Stu, thank you for sharing your thoughts. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
Very much my pleasure. I appreciate being asked. Thanks, Jim.
Great. Take care. Bye.